Joining us now in studio, fresh off his Election Day victory, is John Fossum, the Rice County Attorney.
Good morning, Jeff, and thanks to all the people who went out and voted for me.
All right. Maybe now you can, now that the election is over, you can explain the dynamics of the campaign that you ran.
I don't think I could. You know, try not to irritate too many people and just try to do my job, I think, was the campaign strategy.
All right. John was running unopposed, so we joked about that a little bit. But there's probably not a whole lot of, maybe some joking in your office, but overall it's a pretty serious job that you have. And let's talk about some of the things that have been going on or will be going on. First of all, there has been a spate of assaults going on against corrections officers, prison guards. And here in Rice County, Faribault has the largest prison in the state, no exception to the rule there.
Right. Faribault is the largest prison in the state. We've got 2,000 prisoners in the Faribault prison. We have the warden there. I was meeting with her earlier this week. They have obviously a lot of issues there. Faribault is a medium security prison. It also tends to be the prison that a lot of people go to at the end of their time in prison. So it can be people who are serving life who are about to get out. It can be people who are never going to get out because of their medical facilities there, and who are serving a life without release sentence, but are at the end of their life. So it's a kind of a mixed bag in terms of their inmate population. But you have people who have worked hard to get to Faribault because they've wanted to get out of the more severe prisons. They've wanted to get out of Stillwater. They've wanted to get out, and they're looking forward to release. So it's kind of surprising, I guess, when the inmate population kind of turns on the staff. But we've had, I think, probably close to... I can think of at least four or five inmate assaults on staff in the last year, and just two over the weekend. I don't have the reports on those yet. They go through an investigation process where the Department of Corrections has their investigators. Then they send it off to the Faribault Police, and then they send it to me. So I haven't seen those reports yet, but it's obviously something we take seriously. We prosecute those felony crimes of assault on the corrections officers and try and make sure that we're doing our part to protect the people who are working in the prisons, as well as the other prisoners from the prisoners who have decided that they want to hurt somebody.
Now, you've been working within the criminal justice system for quite some time now. And what has been your experience? Is this a new thing? I mean, we're hearing more about it now. Is it something that the media just happened to latch on to? And is this business as usual, or is it a big change from what has gone on in the past?
Well, I think if it was happening every week, you could say that's brand new. I think we're having a difficult time period. Obviously, we had a corrections officer who was killed up at Stillwater. We had another one who died up at Oak Park Heights. So, and the prisoners all have these communication systems with each other. So, and they move around from prison to prison over the time. So, a lot of things go through that, a lot of rumors and things run through that population. I don't think it's organized. I don't think it's a plan or a something that the prisoners are organizing. I think they act spontaneously. I don't think they're planning it out. I think it's just something that happens, and we're trying to make sure that we do our part in making sure there are such consequences enough to keep people from injuring not just the guards but also the other inmates, and not thinking that it's a free pass for them. That they're just going to lose a little bit of good time, spend a little bit of time in segregation, or go to a higher... What often happens is they'll go to a higher security prison. They'll wind up back in Stillwater and Oak Park Heights, where there's a higher level of security. And they also will wind up often in segregation for some period of time. They'll also wind up losing some good time so that their date of getting out of prison moves back as a result of that. Mm-hmm. But we also will prosecute them if there is a felony assault that takes place, so that we can protect the other people inside the prison.
So if they are convicted of that new assault charge, that would be an additional term to serve when they get done serving their current term?
Right. And mm-hmm. by statute, that is a consecutive sentence. So by statute, it will add on an extra time to their prison mm-hmm. sentence. So they'll have an extra couple of months or years to serve, plus extra supervised release beyond their original time, so that they'll be on parole much longer, mm-hmm. or they'll have more parole time to lose if there's further misconduct in the prisons.
Mm-hmm. Once again, Rice County Attorney John Fossum is with us. You mentioned when you came in, we were talking about what we're going to talk about today, something that kind of intrigued me that I hadn't heard of before, and it hasn't really begun yet, but there is the mechanisms are starting to move to start a veterans court. Tell us about that.
Well, I've been on the, obviously it's Veterans Day this weekend, so mm-hmm. a great time to talk about it. I've been on the planning committee for a couple of months for a judicial district veterans court. And the judicial district that Rice County sits in is Rice County and basically all the counties from the south to the border and out to the Mississippi River. So it's 11 counties, and you were talking about Houston County and Wabasha County and Rice, Steel, mm-hmm. Dodge, and Olmsted County's got, of course, the biggest population. Rice County's the next largest in terms of population. And what we've been looking at is a court to help out veterans who find themselves in the criminal justice system. And Mankato has had a successful program in the 5th Judicial District, and the 5th Judicial District is Blue Earth County and all the counties to the west.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a huge area there, and obviously Mankato has most of the population, and the rest of the counties don't have much population. But we've talked to some of the veterans who come in from Worthington and go to their veterans court in Mankato, and found that it works for them. My objection to a veterans court initially on a district-wide basis is if I'm sending somebody down to Fillmore County, down to Preston, and making them drive there to go to a veterans court, am I punishing them more because they're a veteran than we would if they weren't a veteran?
Mm-hmm.
And what we have come to is we will probably have two veterans courts within this large judicial district, and we'll have one meeting on the eastern side of the district, probably around Rochester or Winona, and we'll have one on the eastern part of the district, probably in Owatonna. And what it is, it's a treatment court. It's like a specialized drug court, treatment court, but for veterans. And one of the questions we had was, or that I had specifically, was how many veterans are we seeing in the court system? Because we tend not to see them that much, mm-hmm. or we tend not to know who they are. And so I checked with our community corrections department and found out that we have 31 veterans on probation right now serving sentences, which is a lot more than I would have thought. So we have a lot of people who may need this kind of intervention. And what they do is they make sure that the Veterans Court has a sponsor who's a veteran. They work with the Veterans Services Organization and try to make sure that veteran is accessing the programming that is available to them as a veteran, accessing the benefits that are available to them as a veteran, and also just make sure that we're meeting their needs and helping them reintegrate into society. We have a lot of people who have some kind of PTSD. We have a lot of people who have multiple tours of combat. Maybe they don't have an entirely honorable discharge, and so they felt like they've had some self-worth issues as a result of that. They've had issues where they think they're not eligible for anything. And so if we're reconnecting them with the benefit structure that's available for veterans, and we're helping them reintegrate into society and getting them out of whatever it is that's bringing them into the criminal justice system, getting them treatment, getting them anger management treatment, getting whatever mental health issues they have addressed, then we're saving money for the system and we're saving these veterans from further criminal conduct.
Now, from a standpoint of the court system, and as you're well aware, this comes out of your budget, I'm sure, or one way or another. Are there resources available for either, you know, the courts and obviously the veterans from, like, the VA? Do they have some things that could help out with you helping the veterans?
And in terms of what we do, you know, we'll have someone who's a coordinator. That's a issue that's going to have to be addressed in terms of who's going to wind up paying for that. In terms of what, you know, my time or the time of the other lawyers, that's just part of our office. You know, we don't need to be compensated for that. Corrections people, we should have someone on corrections staff. We're going to have a lot of volunteers, and we're looking for some grant funding to help make sure that we can fund the infrastructure part of it, which would be someone who's a coordinator. But there will be a lot of donated time from the various counties in terms of donating the time of their corrections officers, donating the time of their prosecutors. We have a couple of volunteer defense attorneys who have agreed to work with the programming. Greg Colby from the Northfield City Council is one of those who has been working with us in terms of setting this up. So we have a lot of – it's not going to be terribly expensive in terms of that. We already have the buildings, right? We have courthouses. We just need to find time. So the court administrator needs to find us time to use space in the buildings. We have prosecutors, so we just need to allocate some of our time to that. We have those corrections officers who already have time to spend with offenders. They need to allocate some of their time to spend with those offenders. The biggest part has been that technical challenge of how do we deal with this huge area. And if you listen to the chief judge or the chief public defender from this district, they'll tell you it's as far from Faribault to Caledonia as it is from New York City to Philadelphia. And so that large geographic area that we cover, how do we do that without placing additional burdens on both the veterans and the people who are working in the court system, so that we don't lose a couple hours driving to Caledonia or Wabasha or Winona every week, and how do we share that time amongst ourselves? So, what we are expecting to do is that by February, Judge Lunig, who is a Navy veteran, is saying we can be up and running by February to start serving the first group of veterans, and some of these are a population that maybe we haven't been reaching that well with our treatment court because they have special needs as veterans, and they don't feel that connected to the people who have been living more of a street life, but they also have, like I said, a lot of shame maybe if they have had a less than honorable discharge from the military. And so connecting them with veterans and helping them get back on their feet is what this Veterans Court is intended to do.
Oh, good, good. I like the idea of it. I'm not surprised that there are a lot of people volunteering and putting some efforts. It's a wonderful, wonderful cause. And the veterans that have served our country, sometimes they need help too. Hey, let's move on. There is, you had a murder case or a murder earlier this year involving a stabbing, and there have been some, I don't know if new developments would be the right word to say in this Judanna Williams case.
Right. Well, Ms. Williams was allowed to bail out, posted $100,000 in bail, and was caught using cocaine within 2 days of bailing out, and is back in custody with currently not allowed release, being held without bail. And we'll have another hearing on the bail issue at the end of the month, and also we'll see where we're going with this case. You know, the thing about these cases is they are complex, and there's a lot of work for us to do on these files. So we're still processing the forensic equipment, unlike on TV, or the forensic information. It doesn't come in over the commercial break. It takes a couple of months. And we're still waiting for the final medical examiner's report and some other information that we'll have on this case that will make a be determinative of where it winds up. But for the time being, Ms. Williams is in custody without the opportunity to bail until we have a further hearing on the question of what is the appropriate amount of, you know, what are the appropriate conditions of release.
You know, Terry had a news story, I believe it was yesterday or the day before, about one of the odder cases and more disturbing cases that we've seen, and that was this woman whose name was Osterbauer, who was accused and I guess convicted of torturing animals and breaking and entering and a lot of different charges. Were you involved? Was your office involved with that?
We do have a case pending against her, which is set for trial in a couple of weeks. And I think it actually might have been set for trial last week, and it's been continued. This involves having, I think, 66 dogs that she had in her custody that were not well cared for. Some of them were undernourished, and so we'll have a trial on that. I think we have a felony charge and a couple of gross misdemeanor charges against her. And we'll be waiting for the trial on that one to see where that goes. I know she was convicted at trial of a burglary and something else in
Hennepin
County.
Okay.
And so we'll see what happens with this case. But that's still waiting for trial on that one.
All right. Lastly, we only have a minute or so, but we've talked with Chief Monty Nelson. We've talked with Sheriff Troy Dunn about the work done this year. The Drug Task Force is really having a good year. I don't know if that would apply, if that's good or bad, but they have been very active this year.
They have been very active this year, and there's been a big push recently to bring a lot of folks in on drug charges that they have discovered over the last, you know, it's not that we're manufacturing the cases, it's that we're finding the people who are selling drugs. Since I've been in office, our drug caseload has more than doubled, and it's because the task force has been doing good work and bringing people in on higher levels of criminality than we've seen in the past, and so there's a lot going on. We've got cases. They have cases pending in federal court in Minneapolis, and I think there's some Dakota County cases as well that have resulted from the work of this task force. They work primarily here in Rice and Le Sueur counties, but if the work leads them to Minneapolis or to Dakota County and they find something there, those cases wind up getting charged. They don't come through my office then, but they send plenty through us as well. They've been a busy group, and next year we change commanders, and Sergeant LaRoche will do a great job, I think, as our task force commander, and I'm looking forward to working with our task force going forward as well.
All right. John, thank you so much for joining us. We certainly appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
That is Rice County Attorney John Fawcett. You're listening to 95.1 FM.